It is Thursday, the 11th of April, and this is episode 159 of Digital Outbox. Welcome to another episode. I'm Chris, and as ever, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Christopher.
I'm going to have to change my intro at some point because I'm bored of saying exactly the same thing each time.
I know, but
we'll have to come up with a script next time.
Oh, we can't script it. You can't do scripts. Actually forgetting you are a voiceover artist.
If anyone heard how many times I have to re-record things because they sound so bad,
Had people tell me that to this podcast, it sounds like we must spend all night re-recording it to get it this good.
Hey. We're that skilled. Yeah.
Uh-huh. If only you knew.
If only they knew. It's desperation of not wanting to do it ever. Once is enough for all these episodes.
I just put it down to you want to get to Tesco, so you know you need to get
pretty much. Get it out, get it done.
If I don't get this right first time, I'm going hungry.
Yes, because Thursday evening is my Tesco evening. Yeah. Absolutely. Right, let's do the news then in light of needing to get to Tesco's to buy more salad leaves. Right. Boris, Mayor of London, has decided that he's going to have a venture capital firm a venture capital amount of money to put towards technology startups. And hopefully in sort of more rundown areas of London, they're going to put 30, how much is it? Is it £11 million?
Yeah, I think in total it comes to about £22 million it can potentially swell to.
That's because in order to get the cash, a venture capitalist has to match the amount coming out of this little pot of money. So some of the established venture capitalists, if they say they're willing to put two in, then you can get two out of this pot. So for technology startups, interesting concept.
And it wasn't just a case of announcing it and then you never hear anything again. They announced it, but actually said we've already done five fundings already, or five investments.
Almost like they'd lined those up, right, to make it ready to go straight away. Looks like it might create jobs, and it's designed to help not the initial necessary startup fund, but the sort of mid-stage, the ongoing, where it starts getting tricky after you get your initial round of funding, when you start wanting to expand because you've got something that is actually starting to work. And I think that's where this money is going to come and try and push things on, because that's apparently very difficult to get money at that stage.
Yes, and I mean, London's getting really topped up at the moment. I mean, Wired had whether you call it an article or a puff piece, I guess will depend on your viewpoint, but it was just pointing out the amount of buzz around London right now. And certainly a lot of the startups, obviously we know, Silicon Valley and San Francisco is where, you know, it's always been hot, but New York's been talked about recently. But they were just pointing out that London's had the same, if not more, funding on more startups.
Well, when the banking system all crashes and they destroy themselves in a bonus fight, then maybe they're looking to technology firms a la Silicon Valley to sort of take over from that.
So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, hopefully we'll hear over the coming year about what they've actually invested in and how they're getting on. I mean, I'm just looking down the firms just now. There's Masabi, which is providing mobile ticketing solutions to travel operators. Love Home Swap, which isn't the best name. Love Home Swap is an international holiday home exchange website. And surely they could have spent more money in their name.
Once they're stuck with that URL, though.
Love
brand awareness.
Love Home Swap.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, I guess London is the place. Like, why pull the money where all the people are, basically? But, you know, London does get a lot of, attention through things like this. Whereas, what is it? Glasgow's the city of, the technology city or something this year?
Oh, I can't remember. It was some £26 million over the next year. And the only update in that is they've appointed a manager. Well done.
Right, there you go. Okay, let's get on to HMV. So, looks like they have got a buyer from where they went into administration. So, a company called, I'm struggling, where is it?
Hilco.
That's it, Hilco, who already own HMV in Canada.
Yes.
Decided so they'd buy up.
And they were much rumoured. They were much rumoured to take over the kind of the remnants, and they have.
So they've bought all 132 shops and the also the FOP chain. There are 9 FOP branches which they bought. I imagine, though, not all those branches are going to survive, because that's probably the whole point, right?
I don't know, actually, because one of the branches that's part of the 132 had actually been earmarked for closure. So it was one of the main ones in Glasgow City Centre. And I was quite surprised when they said that was shutting, but it's now being kept open by this buyout.
Well, this company's known for being a restructuring and a refocusing specialist, so they're going to do something. But they reckon they're trading strongly in Canada, so they're hoping to be able to turn around the UK branches as well.
And it'll be interesting, because Game, who's another one that was in trouble and have been bought over, when they're looking at moving into selling tablets. And it's like HMV did this as well. You know, they went into that kind of, let's buy your headphones, DVD, Blu-ray, tablets. Didn't really work out.
No, almost. At the time they started doing that, they were up against Virgin Megastore, which was doing a similar thing as well, though. But Virgin Megastore pulled out about the right time, as it turns out. They seemed to go out, you know, without destroying themselves, basically.
Well, the thing is as well, I mean, Currys is doing well, but Currys is doing well because Comet's disappeared. There is no alternative. And it is getting to that point where you feel like you don't have many alternatives now.
On the high street? Yep. No, exactly. I mean, but then again, not many people buy from the high street, and that's why we've lost all our alternatives. Lulzek. So the UK hackerramas, they're called hacktivists is what they call themselves. They've been jiffing around and attacking lots of computers left, right, and centre. I don't know. Just made it up. Remember, we don't re-record this crap. So basically, they've been up in court and they've been agreeing or admitting to attacking all these places, and they're soon to be charged. Soon to be sentenced.
Sentenced, yep. So there's three of them. So there's Jake Davis, there's Mustafa Albasam, and there is Ryan Aykroyd. They have all pled guilty.
That reminds me of Grange Hill.
What, Ryan Aykroyd?
Yeah, I don't know why. Bizarre.
I thought of Dan Aykroyd.
I think these guys are up for, up the creek, because they'll be made an example of, for sure.
Well, the thing is, I mean,
they're all young guys.
They're young guys, but also, I mean, they pled guilty to attempting to break in to computers run by NHS, Sony, 20th Century Fox, News International.
And the CIA.
You know, so it's not trivial.
No, really not. I mean, they're very sensitive things, and you know, they're clearly intelligent and young guys. But I think they're up for it now. I think the example will be made of them. And you know, you play with fire, you get burnt.
You sound such an old man when you said that.
I am an old man.
In fact, you aged about 3 years just during this 20-minute podcast.
Oh God. I mean, pensioner before we finish. Google. So the Play Store has been upgraded. Well, it's being rolled out to version 4.0 from, I don't know, 3.0, I guess.
There's nothing I can add to that.
Basically, they've brought it in line with the kind of latest look and feel of Android and made it cleaner, and I think they've kind of removed some of the superfluous steps you had to jump through and hoops you had to get through to getting apps on your phone. But and it kind of comes after they've already had a good clean out, so they've got rid of 60,000 apps, the end of last year, I think, making it much cleaner and more straight, streamlined, I guess.
Yeah. So these were apps of dubious quality removed around about, I think it was January, February time. Which is definitely a good thing, because you don't want either of these. And fair enough, Apple were probably the first to start it. This whole, there's 700,000, no, we've got 900,000, no, we've got 400,000 specific tablet applications, and then Google just got caught in the same game. Yeah. And it's like, don't care. I want an app store that works. And that's something you can't say about the Apple one right now, because discovery's poor, the speed's poor. It's just really hard to... I just find it really slow. And certainly the Google Store, I've never found slow, but... It doesn't really, there's nothing intelligent about it, and you just can't find a lot of stuff. I'm still relying on going to websites to recommend apps for me to go and buy in a store, not going to the store and getting it telling me, by the way, there's all this good stuff.
Yeah, have a go at this. This is great kind of thing. And I mean, they started putting more of that in, but you start playing more and more of a dangerous game, don't you, when you start going down that review route? Excuse me, because it's supposed to be a meritocracy or whatever inside an app store. As to what's good is based on what's good,
yes,
rather than what someone said is good. And it wasn't really, because it was a bit of money behind it or something.
I know we've got some more on the Apple App Store later on, so we'll kind of keep more on the Apple side for later. But one thing I did notice, I've not had it rolled out, it's rolling out over the next sort of 3-4 weeks.
Yes.
But the icon sizes, when you're actually looking at the App Store, is now seemingly huge. So I think somebody was saying on a 10-inch tablet, the icons are all, you know, like 500 pixels or 400 pixels.
Wow, that is big.
They're like really massive icons, and it's like there's only 10 icons in a page on a 10-inch tablet.
But then again, you know, we think we're above, you know, something as silly as how something looks before we click on it. But it's you totally go by, you know, we love it when they look good. And this definitely looks better from the videos and the screen grabs I've seen. It's cleaner, it's more focused, and, you know, it delivers up, you know, instead of telling you, here are your recommendations and chewing up screen space like that, it just shows you a nice set of recommendations on the page, you know. It looks like a good step, and we will obviously grab hold of that as soon as it starts coming out over the next few weeks. I imagine if this initial rollout goes well, then they'll speed that up.
Hope so.
Yep. 4GEE, T-Mobile, Orange and T-Mobile, so EE's trying to keep in the news with their 4G, and they're saying, we're going faster.
Which was a bit, it was Shaq proclaimed this to me. Have you seen the news? Have you seen the Twitter account? Have you seen EE? And I was like, no, I don't follow them. They're scum. And and it turns out they're basically upping the speed in their service. So instead of, I think it previously the most you could get was 40 meg, and it was averaging about 10 or 12. What they're saying now is that the top speed is going to be 80, and the average they expect is over 20. But that's only in 10 cities that they're going to roll this out on.
Probably those original ones that they initially rolled out.
So Birmingham, Bristol, yeah. Cardiff, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Leeds, Liverpool, London, Manchester. Which, of course.
Because Glasgow's always included for some reason.
Because it's a future city.
Yeah, there we go. That's what it is. Because it's got bus timetables that are digital.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, you'd be through your limit in no time at all.
And when we were talking about it, I was like, so are they up in the download? And he was like, no. And it's like, so I says, but in day-to-day usage, you're never using anything that determines.
What would you ever want to do
And that's,
it's this, it's like, I think I keep bleating on about it. I've had fiber installed. The only time I notice fiber is when I'm uploading a YouTube video. The only time. The rest of the time, don't really notice it. It does. Videos still buffer occasionally. You know, all those things that are supposed to go away. I very rarely notice it.
I tend to agree. The only thing I do notice, or I don't notice, is that there's multiple devices all working at the same time.
Yes, that's a good point. Yes, the width of the connection is much wider.
Whereas I did used to notice, you know, if I was gaming, if there was a download running, I'd be like, oh, and I remember, you know, playing on Xbox Live and people going, oh, I've left my torrents running. And I'd be like, David Allen, stop your torrents. Because you're stuttering all over the place, and it's certainly loud.
Bouncing.
I can see you can. I don't care what's running in the house, and I can game, and it's nothing really affecting.
That's a very good point. Yes, you could be doing something downloading something on another computer, and yes, it doesn't affect you like it does when you've got a narrow connection. But you're not going to be doing that on your phone. So
no, totally agreed. No, well, not at the moment.
And apps on phones and things aren't relying on those kind of connections yet. Because they're not generally available, so they cannot rely on those connections.
But it's whether when we see the latest phones out this year, maybe the latest games, maybe they will start to take advantage of that. I don't know.
But I don't think the take-up's going to be big enough to warrant it. And certainly the data, it's not the fact that, you know, they've got that bandwidth. It's just the fact that no one has a data contract to make use of it.
No, and that's going to be the problem when it comes to, you know, so you could turn around and say, well, it'll be great because we will be able to do video calling. But we've had video calling for years. It's not really taking off. You'll use it in specific circumstances. So you'll not use it day to day. And you will just burn through that bandwidth.
It makes cloud more viable for a phone, basically, which is a good thing, I guess. HTC One. So basically, HTC One got a lot of good reviews all round for being a great bit of hardware, one of the best Android implementations, you know, But basically, they've not made any money from it.
No, they've struggled. Well, I think they'd struggled to get camera components was one of the problems because they were hoping.
Probably because Apple bought up. I imagine there's some stuff. HTC was the one that Apple went for, right? They really went bang on them, I think.
Was it?
As well as Samsung. Yeah, they, at one point, though, it was like HTC, yeah, we don't like them. So I wonder whether they, in the background of the industry, they're saying don't supply them.
No, I'm not sure. I think that. I mean, because they're saying there's a shortage of cameras for the HTC One, and it meant it launched late, and it didn't launch in all the countries they'd hoped for. They initially said we wanted to launch in 80, and they've launched in 3.
a little bit of a difference there.
But I think one of the issues was, from a creditor standpoint, their profits in the last quarter were so poor that they'd actually fell down the pecking order. So when it came to actually handing over money, and when it came to the third-party supplier supplying the parts, they fell down the list. So Apple and Samsung are obviously at the top, and HTC were struggling to actually get in that list, which has hampered Samsung before when Apple used to buy up all the screens. You know, other people were saying, like, well, we know it's there, but we can't get it. And Apple, I mean, Samsung haven't said as much, but Apple certainly once a year usually say, we're sticking away 1 billion or 2 billion, and we're not telling you why, but we're investing in the supply chain. And that, to me, just means we're buying up, you know, next year's tech.
Yeah, it was Gorilla Glass, wasn't it, that was hard to get hold of because Apple took it.
I think it was Gorilla Glass, but I think it was the original. See, when they started doing the Retina screens, I think it was like they had all the suppliers of Retina screens and others were struggling.
Okay. I mean, it's not like that HTC is still making money. I mean, say they made nearly a million in profit. And obviously that, you know, profit is pure profit. So, but that is not a great deal of money for a company wants to reinvest going forward to reinvest that money.
Yeah, but that's 1 million on a billion, you know, so it's nothing. You know, that's really tiny.
It's a poor return.
It's a poor return, and also there's no sign of turning it around because, I mean, you touched on it at the start by saying, you know, HTC One is great, and it looks a superb bit of hardware. I mean, all the videos, all the screenshots, it looked good from day one. It's been confirmed, you know, Verge and Gadget and GDGT all said it was really good. You know, best Android phone, and I think GDGT actually said it was probably the best smartphone ever made. I mean, they actually put it ahead of kind of everything. But it looks like it's just going to struggle to sell, and it's back to have they lost the mindset of the tarnished brand? Is Samsung one Android, and is Apple one iPhone? Is Apple one the kind of smartphoney from America?
Or are we getting to the stage where there isn't a lot of profit to be made in making handsets? Are we getting to that stage? Because that's the other angle. But the Samsung and Apple would probably say no, quite frankly, because we've got it all.
Well, they would say no, but and you know all of my stats. I was almost tempted to start up a weekly stat, but there was. Out of the smartphone profits, Apple have 73% and Samsung have 28%, which adds up to 101 because all the rest are losing money.
Right.
That's the reality of it. There's only two people making money out of this.
The two that are fighting. Samsung, to make more money, have unveiled the Mega. Is that a Mega in your pocket or are you just happy to see me? Basically, this is...
I hope you didn't save that up, also.
This is their latest. I'm going to call it a phablet, but really, it's a tabone, isn't it? Really, it's a 6.3-inch phone, supposedly. I'll say that again: a 6.3-inch phone. They reckon that you can still put it in your pocket. I think that's a load of baloney.
And Dom Jolly is doing a dance of 1,000 dances right now because it's like, I predicted this 12 years ago and it's come true.
Stats and specs of this aren't completely confirmed. No one's saying whether it's a 720p or a 1080p resolution, but it's, you know, it's got a lot of power behind it. And say, if you want, they clearly liked the fact, the direction of the Note. And I think some people liked Note quite a lot.
I think there's a lot of people like the Note. But I mean, just on the specs, I mean, it's like it's 6.3 inches. And I'm trying to see. Yeah, I mean, weight wise, it's a kilogram. it's not, but it could well as be. It's 200 grams. I mean, that's like, it's like twice, twice the weight of an iPhone. It's just
but then again, like for something that size, you know, it's one of those expectation things, isn't it, that probably feels about right for something
that
size.
But Chris, it's the size of your face.
Yeah, it's true. But this device isn't for me, but then people like
just
the Note.
Just as well.
I just think that, you know, some of the...
You'd have to buy a man bag just for your phone.
They've clearly said, right, you know, the Note went really well. That was 5.2. So surely what we need to do now is make it bigger. In fact, 5.3 it was. When they might just be losing the reason why the Note was, you know, good, because it was just... It was still a phone, but just about. I can see this 6.3 getting embedded in the back of people's headrests on posh cars. That's kind of size we're doing. So it's video size, isn't it, basically?
But I'm holding the Nexus up. It's like, yes, it's not a kick the teeth off that. I mean, this is massive. This is a 7-inch tablet. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
I agree,
but then sales will lead it. You will see. Yeah,
and as you said, I mean, the Note was popular. Lots of people have said it's, you know, don't dismiss having a big, you know, a tablet that can,
yeah, but
that can dial.
It was already huge.
Yeah.
And they've made it huger, which I think is a mistake.
I just think Samsung have looked at Apple and says, they've got one phone, we're going to have 20. We're going to have every size covered. You will be able to walk in, and for whatever's out in the market, we'll have an equivalent.
Okay, and that's a fair enough point to make as well. I mean, if we call this just a micro tablet, I think it would go down better. But the fact that they've called it more of a phone, or, you know, maybe it's a tablet with phone device in it, isn't it, really?
But the bit I don't get is, like, the original Note was 5.3 inches, and I think the next one that came out was 5.5, and they're bringing out this 6.3, but just in case that doesn't work, they've also got a Mega that's 5.8.
But with Android, it doesn't matter, and that's the whole point, isn't it? They don't have to rethink everything. They can just produce a new bit of hardware, and as long as they can produce it at the right price and sell enough of them, they're going to make money off it. I agree. I'm being a little bit devil advocate. Facebook, they're going to start charging you to message people, but only people that aren't already in your circle of friends, basically, and only when they're deemed important enough to be chargeable. So basically, if you're not, was it Tom Daly? You cost you £10, £10.68 to message him. Why would you do that?
I've no idea. When you can just message him on Twitter for nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't quite understand. I don't quite understand this.
I mean, what it is going to do is a lot of celebrities are going to have themselves burnt here, because while someone like Tom Daly is a £10.68 a message. There's plenty of people that are down at 71p.
and seemingly it wasn't Facebook that decided on the how much they set. Seemingly it's down to the celeb or famous person to actually dictate.
Okay.
There's a little slider. So Robert Peston, he's obviously calculated, being the sharp businessman that he is, that 71 pence is the perfect rate to go for.
Oh, there you go. I didn't realise that bit of it. Okay, so there you go. I mean... Does it work? I don't know. I mean,
would you pay 71 pence to talk to Jeremy Hunt?
No.
I know what
I'd message him. Pay 71p to talk to anyone.
I know what I'd message him for my 71p.
This is 71p well spent. Here I go. I'm going to make the most of this. Plus, you know, it doesn't mean they're going to get red, does it? Anyway, so I guess it's one way of monetizing things, and it's also one way of stopping just random spam just going out through the system, and I guess that's part of it as well.
I would spend 71 pence to message Jeremy Hunt, tell him what I want to tell him, and also, like, laugh at Thatcher. I'm just disappointed it's taking me 23 minutes to get my laugh at Thatcher now.
Cruel man. She was a cruel woman. App Gratis, which was an app discovery application that was in the App Store and Apple. How many more apps can I get in there? Basically, Apple have pulled App Gratis from the App Store, citing reasons of them. I can't remember what reasons they cited.
Apple last year said that they didn't want other discovery tools in there. You know, so they made some kind of changes that said, you know, we don't want apps that you can download or buy that start to recommend or allow you to link to other apps to buy. And there's, people were saying, was it them trying to protect the market? Was it them trying to say there's one app store, no confusion? You know, it's not like where you can go and like Google Play, or you could sideload. It's like, we've got one app store, That's where you're going to come and get recommendations, not at any of these other tools. AppGratis, initially they didn't say too much, but then they've come out and said, we're shocked. You know, we've got investors and we can't believe this has happened. But I mean, they've got 45 people working for them, and it's like, what are they doing?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's
But I think wasn't one of the reasons, the fact they got 45 people working for them means that they have to find a money stream somehow, and there's a worry that their money stream is based on people bunging them, because as soon as they recommend an application, you can effectively expect your app to be downloaded, you know, 500,000 times.
Yes, and they were doing a big push on, you know, if you looked at, there were some popular paid apps that all of a sudden were becoming like number one in the free app side, and they were maybe like a year old. And I'd know about them, but I was like, so why is that? And if you looked at the description, it would be like, you know, this week's free app from AppGratis. So obviously they were doing, you know, a number of deals in the background.
Yeah, and you have to do deals when you're, you know, when you've got 40 odd people working for you to keep the money rolling in. So, and that's, I guess that is Apple's worry, the fact that then it's not based on what is good and what is bad. It's based on a business deal going on in the background, which doesn't bode well for their app store, which is what they want to keep nice and clean.
And that was what sources close to the company. So whether this is official, you know, Apple or not,
sure.
But they basically said they were troubled by the fact it looked like the business model favoured those with money against those that didn't. You know, so if you were a Rupert Murdoch and you could buy exposure, then AppGratis looked like a great way of getting it. Whereas if you were just like me and you and had the best app ever, then you were...
Yeah, we couldn't get those 500, sorry, the 500,000, you know. Yeah, but it's another case of it's hard for them to manage this whole massive thing that they've created.
It is. I mean, there was another story this week that the Apple had banned issue 12 of Saga, which is a well known comic, and Apple was getting, you know, derided by, you know, the author, and loads of people picked it up, and it was seemingly over a small panel which featured two gay characters, and it was like, oh, it's a disgrace, and so overnight. You know, I think it was on Tuesday night, they were lambasted and everybody was saying boohoo Apple. And then Comixology said, actually, it was us that banned it because we interpreted the rules and we're now realising we shouldn't have done that.
And the, do you know what? Partly all this furore goes around is just because it's good advertising for their
And I did wonder, because it was like... You know,
it's got to be. I mean, once you make a fuss, people get on the high horse, say Apple's this.
Because the people that hooked in were smart people. It wasn't just like, you know, like me and you going, wah. It was, you know, it was like, you know, Josh Falsey from The Verge.
The right people.
It was Merlin Mann. And he actually said, I feel a bit foolish now. Just because I assumed it was Apple. And also it fitted their motive or the MO from the last year that they've done similar things. But then in hindsight,
Like the BBC getting sucked in with that, you know, Samsung tosh that we had the other week. People are scrabbling around for news stories at the moment, and people are getting more ingenious about how to get themselves in the news, if you like, by press release or whatever. So yeah, it's good to keep be wary of that.
Telling you, you're a child of Thatcher. I didn't think you were that cynical.
Google What have they done? Oh, yeah, they've got this inactivity monitor now on your accounts, which lets you go in and choose a setting that says, if I've been inactive for X amount of time, assume that I've died and do this with my data. Sounds good.
It sounds perfect. But I think you're going to see Google Plus membership drop by half because people signed up. I've never used it. 6 months ago. And they'll have all these accounts shut down. No.
Lots of dead people on their hands.
I think it's a good... I've Shaq laughs at me, and I think you probably inside laugh at me as well. I've always kind of worried about my digital will. What happens when I die?
I openly laugh at you. I don't have to do it inside.
But and it's not so much, I don't care about some sort of crazy legacy nonsense. It's more stuff like, you know, from a hosting point of view, is somebody going to be chasing after, you know, is somebody going to be emailing my relatives and trying to get money, and what happens with email, and what happens with all this, you know, X, Y, and Z? What happens to the podcast? How does Chris and Henry keep this, well, how does Chris keep this going?
Oh, I could talk to myself a lot, you know, for a while. But yeah, you're right. What do you do about all those things and shutting them all down? But then again, it is data stored, because it's a bit like, you know, if you had a laptop hanging around the house, you might have all your photos and memories stored on there. And nowadays we store it in the cloud. So in the same way, you'd kind of want someone to be able to use your own photos. I'm sure you'd probably want people to have the stuff you dumped on Flickr and dumped in Facebook and stuff like that.
And while some people are comfortable with the fact that, well, I don't care, it's just a thing, but you know, other people might be uncomfortable that their partner or whatever, or their son has a Twitter account and people are still tweeting them and people are still Facebooking them and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So Facebook have a way of turning your site into a memorial. So memorializing your
account.
They don't
give anyone access to your account, but you can go and tell them that, you know, that yes, memorialize it. Yeah.
Twitter seemingly has a more complex way of doing it, but similar to the way Gmail used to handle it, but Google's kind of done this an active account manager. Pick a timeline, and after that you can decide to delete it or actually hand over to a trusted contact.
Inactive account manager does sound better than death settings.
I prefer death. No, come on, just get to it.
Tell the truth, death setting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so but it can be for, you know, other reasons. If you know, just as an easy way, once if your account, if you've sat there, you can set your length of time that it's inactive for, can't you?
You can. So
and then you can also set what you want it to do.
Yes.
At the end of that, you can say just delete all my data, give access to these set people. I think they're the two options, aren't they, basically?
Yes, but you can also do things like, you know, after 3, 6, 9 or 12 months, you can say, do you want to email me or do you want to tell me that I'm about to do this? Or you can just go for the, actually, just go for it. So I think it's a sensible thing because it's actually taking responsibility of, you know, for your data. It's not just another service that says sign up and then they don't really care about what happens to you after that.
Yeah, and I think Google have proved so far all along that they're willing to accept that this data is yours and they're just temporary guardians of it while it's in their service, because they've offered all the tools to be actually to extract your data out all along, basically, if you really want to. And this is just the kind of it's the final piece of that puzzle.
Yes.
The end of the news.
What a morbid way to end.
Yeah. Sad.
It's not really.
Do my digital will. No, it's not really. I haven't got a pick today. Have you got a pick?
Not really. I could prattle on about my monitor, but I'm not going to. I could prattle on about my little adapter I've got my original SNES pads plugged into on my Mac, but I'll maybe keep that for next week in our blog post.
All right. Sounds good. Seems we are over half an hour now.
Yeah.
So that's all good. So as ever, if you want to find out more about what we do, you can www.digitaloutbox.com. Email info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. Ian, where can we find you?
IanD.net, where you will find said post about monitor, because it's a fantastic monitor. And I'm on Twitter as Sweeper.
And I am on Twitter as CheesyUK, and you can read about my racing antics at academyracer.co.uk.
So how close are we to the first race?
April 27th is the first race.
Oh, 2 weeks?
I've got official test next Wednesday. Yeah, I mean, it's all getting close, but the first race is only sprint event, so I'm not even racing against other people on track.
But
there you go,
but
it's still exciting. I'm still, and in my little mind, it's going to be dead exciting. Anyway, I look forward to that, and I'm sure I'll update you. That's it. Speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Oh, yeah.